Well, what did the crown actually do to its office holders? It resorted to all kinds of different schemes to squeeze money from them. One of the crown's favorite schemes was just to start creating new offices, a sort of early modern equivalent of printing more money. And it generated a similar kind of resentment, because when the crown created new offices, it would thereby dilute, in effect, the value of the existing offices, because every officer had the right to certain kinds of perquisites and fees and things that he could collect. If the crown decided it was going to make two courts out of one and have one court sit for half of the year and the other court sit for the other half of the year, that meant that the officers on these courts were now going to lose about half of their business. In fact, the scheme of creating new offices was such an unpleasant prospect for the officers that what the crown would also do sometimes is simply threaten to create new offices without actually doing so. It would say, well, we're going to create a new court or a new set of herring inspectors or something like this, and then it would allow the threat to be bought off. But, of course, if the officers of the court or the officers in this position or that position would agree to make a charitable donation to his monarchy's projects against the Spanish Habsburgs or something like this, we can probably avoid the creation of these new offices. That was another fairly common scheme that the French crown used. Another somewhat blunter trick the French crown used to play on its officers was just stop paying them. It would arbitrarily, from time to time, suspend payment of the gage, that is to say, that 10% salary, 10% of the value of the office itself, which was supposed to be annually paid to the venal office holders. Or else the French crown might promise its officers a future increase in salary sometime down the road at some unspecified time in return for an immediate cash contribution up front. Other tricks included suspending the payment of rente, the kind of annuity or bond that the French government used to sell to raise funds, and the office holders themselves were some of the biggest holders of these government bonds, so that when the French crown suspended payment on its bonds, it was the office holders who often took the biggest hit. But of all the tricks that the French crown liked to play on its office holders in pursuit of more money, the most explosive of all, as we're going to see, was the threat to manipulate the polette, that is to say, the threat to manipulate the right of full heritability of a venal office. And I'd now like to look at the actual sequence of events in the Fronde of the Parlement. During the 1630s, relations between the Crown and the Parlement of Paris, the senior law court in the entire country, deteriorated really rather sharply. And from the year 1636, the Parlement of Paris began increasingly reluctant, indeed began refusing, to ratify new tax proposals of the French crown. The Parlement was offended both by the seemingly arbitrary nature of these new taxes, of these increases in taxation, and I think also it has to be said in defense of these magistrates, the Parlement was well aware of the intense social suffering caused by the crown in increasingly, again and again and again, ratcheting up the burden of taxation on the common people. The Crown's response to the growing resistance of the Parlement in the 1630s is interesting. The Crown would reply either by so-called letters of jugement, which is a kind of a fancy way of the King saying, I order you to register these new financial edicts, or, quite significantly, the Crown would often respond by turning to other royal courts, other less troublesome royal courts, to ratify these fiscal edicts. And as we see, this familiar pattern of the Crown having to circumvent its own institutions to get its fiscal policies passed. But despite this careful balancing act, this sort of combination of circumvention and intimidation, events in the provinces soon precipitated a crisis in French royal finance. Peasant discontent with rising taxation finally burst into open revolt in the year 1637. And by the end of the 1630s, there were entire districts in France which were just not paying any taxes whatsoever. Moreover, on the accounting side of things, by the end of the year 1642, by anticipating so many of its future revenues, the Crown found that it had actually spent almost all of its projected revenues from the year 1644. It was running almost 2 years ahead of itself and had been spending its own taxes. The Crown was in a very desperate situation, and at this point it therefore introduced two sweeping reforms in the summer of the year 1642. The first thing it did was it now authorized the intendants to apportion and supervise the collection of direct taxes, not just oversee it. Up to this point, when the intendants had been dispatched to the provinces in the mid-1630s, their function had been just to oversee the normal mechanisms of tax collection to kind of make sure that things went according to plan. They were now given the job of tax collection itself.